Hey everyone, and welcome to Signals from the Frontline, your every Thursday recorded podcast brought to you by Frontline Gaming. We are your hosts. Wait, Kicker's not here. I'm going to use one CP for Rapid Ingress. To Rapid Ingress, co-host Nikki D. Cannon, flannel flame producer extraordinaire, and taking over the second chair for this week. And I'm Seth the Mad Doctor, competitive correspondent. How has everyone been doing?
Hey, Seth. Well, I'm doing well tonight. You guys have way more room up here than I do in the back, so I'm a big fan of this part already.
I think you have more room back there.
Well, it's all, you know, piles of shame and gray box.
Right, that's fair. That's fair. There. You know, this is the prime seating here on the aluminum egret.
Yes, it is. But as we get started here, we'll make sure to remind everyone, because we forgot to do it last week, but you're watching our show, be sure to like the video, comment as you go through, subscribe to our channel so you get all of these updates, plus other things like Codex Cliff Notes and some special tactic videos. Seth, you've been posting a lot recently.
Yeah, I've been trying to put out an orc video every week. I'm actually probably, after we're done with the show tonight, I'll probably record another. I want to make my content, make everyone happy. But yeah, I've been putting out a lot there. Also, don't forget to join our Discord. Link is in the description below. That's a great way to interact with us, and also a great chance for you to get your show questions and hobby progress in so that we can bring them up here on the show. But Nikki D, what have you been up to since we last saw you?
Well, I'm skipping ahead on the slides here to your hobby progress, but for me, it's been a busy week. I was on work travel for a good few days, so that really limited my hobby progress. I've built and have gotten some painting done on a Chaos Death Guard Rhino. Have built up some Plague Marines, and they're going to be next on my painting desk. But because I was flying and traveling, I had some time to almost finish the entirety of Soul Hunter, the first book in the Nightlords trilogy by Aaron Dembski Bowden.
Yep.
Great writer, right? Like, this is the thing about some of the Black Library authors, right? Like, these are well accomplished authors. And ADB, I think, is one of the ones that's generally recognized as the best. But like, this has, to me, it kind of feels like Captain America, Winter Soldier. Where, like, that's a great Marvel movie that just happens to, it's a great spy thriller movie
that happens to
have Marvel characters where you know the names of. And Soul Hunter is like that for me. Like, it is this great sci-fi, you know, opera, you know, type of setting that just happens to be 40K. So, you know, that sort of book I really enjoy. It's been really, really great. And when we come back next week, I should have some more progress. But Seth, we've got your hobby progress up. What have you been up to?
I've been working on trying to get a few final models painted for what should be my orc list that I'll be taking to a team event in 2 weeks now. Lock at the time of recording, list lock on Saturday. So I think I have my list together, but
more. You have a team event in 2 weeks, and then also Rocky Top right after that.
Yeah. 3 weeks.
There we go. Okay.
And then I think I have like a week and a half off, and then I go to ACO.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a lot of orcs in a quick succession. But I wanted to add some Meganob models that weren't just the stock GW one. The stock GW one's great. I have it. I painted it. I love it. But it is very monopose. So I did some 3D prints. So I did this guy here. He's looking big and bad. But my favorite one was the next one, which is this monstrosity wielding what appears to be a V8 engine as his Ooge Choppa. He's all upper body. He's definitely skipped leg day.
Yeah.
He is just a beefy, chunky boy. So I'm kind of excited to finally get those done. I still got to put the tufts on the bases, but they're painted and varnished.
I'm dealing with the same problem you've dealt with. It's like, which way do I look here to get a good view of the guy that he's, it's like, oh wait, is he behind me? Over which shoulder?
He is behind you.
I don't know if it's the power cables or something else like that, but like this particular model, it reminds me a lot of Angron. Like,
I got the Bane vibes.
Oh yeah. I could see that. Yeah.
Yeah. It was like Bane orc, like all jacked up.
Yeah, Bane, anyway. Especially like 90s animated cartoon Bane version. Yeah. I see that. Yeah. I like that.
My
favorite Bane.
Besides that, working on my reps with various lists, looking at differences between Green Tide and Bully Boys, trying to figure out my team matrix, my what are my good matchups and my bad matchups for the team. Working through all that stuff. But otherwise, outside of 40K, Nikki D, I told you I'd tell the story when we got on the show. Before we got on the show, I spent a good hour on tech support with Delta. I was talking with Adam Solis, the head judge, and we were going to carpool from Philadelphia to the hotel and ACO,
which is generally what most people do for the purposes of, if they're flying in, that's the easiest way.
Philly's
to do,
about like an hour drive away. So it makes it easy for us to share a ride over. So we were both talking about when the flights needed to be. And so I was like, okay, we settled on it. I'm going to go book them. I have a bunch of airline miles. Cause I, since I started traveling a lot for these events, I decided, okay, I'm going to try to travel on the same airline, use the rewards program, try to accumulate, you know, some Sky Miles. So I had enough that I basically could get a free flight, which was awesome. And I kept trying to book it, and it was like, can't process your request online. And I was, they were like, go to our need help center and message someone. So I'm messaging someone, and they're like, yeah, we see what's going on. Your account was audited because we didn't confirm your identity. And so we shut down your account. And I was like, okay, well, how can we get my account back open? They're like, it's easy. You fill out this form, you send us a copy of your photo, your government photo ID. We'll get it audited. You'll get back up and running, and you can book your flight. I was like, all right, cool. And so I go to the link, and the form doesn't give me an option to submit my photo ID. It just gives me an option to change my name, date of birth, or gender. And so I message him back, and I was like, there's no option about like confirming my identity and submitting. And we go in a circle for like 30 minutes of them being like, well, try this link. And it's the same form. And I'm like, there's no option for me to confirm my identity and submit my driver's license. And finally, after like 30 minutes of back and forth, I just got pissed and I screenshotted my webpage because I'm like, they must think I'm an idiot. So I screenshotted the webpage and sent it to them. And I was like, there is no option on this link you sent me. And they were like, oh, you have to log out of your like rewards account first. And I was like, we've just been doing this for 30 minutes and you didn't mention the important first step. And so then I log out and I do the form and I message them and I'm like, okay, I did the form. How long should I expect for a reply? They're like 3 to 4 weeks.
I would say like days. Like,
yeah, that's what I was figuring. I was like, yeah, I get it. It's, you know, it's the evening. I'll get a response tomorrow, you know? Mm-hmm. And they're like, no, 3 to 4 weeks. I was like, I don't know that the flight's going to have seats in 3 to 4 weeks. Cause that's like maybe a week before I go to ACO.
Yeah.
So they were like, they sent me over to someone else. And then that person, his name's Tim. I really appreciate you, Tim, because Tim was like, done, you're fixed. Go book your flight in like 5 minutes. I was like, awesome. Thank you. Next time, just ask for Tim, folks.
Just ask for Tim. That's how I go through life.
Yeah. I don't know who you are, Tim, but you are a true hero. So yeah, outside that, I did, like I said, I was doing a lot of reps throughout the weekend, but also painting. So I watched the series on Netflix, Baby Reindeer.
Oh yeah.
It was weird.
I've had it recommended to me. I guess the premise of it, Seth, is it's like a story of a guy that's, I mean, I guess the creator, maybe actor. It's like
the actor is the guy.
He was stalked, right?
Yeah.
Is that basically it?
Yeah. The actor was the individual that was stalked. Correct. But it's about a lot more than that. But it was an odd trip. It's a fun trip, but it's definitely like odd. Places.
Yeah, there can be TV shows or movies that they're not necessarily, you know, fun or exhilarating, but they're still you're still satisfied when you watch it. Yeah. Like, it's a good story, right? Or it elicits emotions, just weird emotions, but still emotions.
Yeah. And then I watched Man in Full. That was bad. Don't watch that.
What is that?
That's on Netflix as well. That was like on Netflix that popped up and it had Jeff Daniels in it. And I love Jeff Daniels. So I was watch it. And it was about like a real estate mogul in Atlanta. It's not good. Don't watch it. Okay. Don't waste your time. I was very confused as to where it was going. And then it ended and never went anywhere. And I was like, all right, that's like 5 or 6 episodes of my life I can't get back. Yeah. Thanks, Jeff.
Okay.
But outside that, I changed up my workout routine. I told you I've been doing that Juggernaut AI app. Yes. I was really like, it was working fine, but I was just like, it's like $37. And I really didn't think it was doing anything that the spreadsheet programs couldn't do. So I went with a different spreadsheet program and it literally kicked my ass this week. I am like, I can't get out of this chair. I'm sore. So it's doing its job.
If the show just keeps running, it's because you can't get up and we're just stuck here talking then for the rest of the
forever,
night.
For the rest of the night. Yeah. So otherwise, that's what I've been working out and watching strange Netflix shows and painting models and playing 40K. What about you? What else has been going on in your life?
So I mentioned I was, you know, traveling last week and Seth, you travel a lot, whether it's for work or for Warhammer things. One of the most awkward things that I find is trying to figure out what TV show or movie I'm going to watch on a flight. because you're watching something on a screen, on a phone, an iPad, you know, or computer, whatever that you may have there. And I've been on flights where I see people watching things on airplanes that are very not appropriate to watch on an airplane in public, or even just watching, like, I watched the John Wick Chapter 4 on a flight. Yeah. And, you know, after I finished the movie, like, I turn around and there's like a kid like over my over my shoulder. I'm like, I don't know if they, you know,
should have seen all that.
Should have seen that. So my what I try to do is like find like a PG-13 movie that is, you know, that's not fair. So it's, you know, you're not going to have any, you know, nudity. There might be swearing, but I'm gonna have headphones on anyway, so that doesn't matter. There's not really going to be any gory violence. But about a year ago, I had never seen an M. Night Shyamalan movie. I had not seen a single one until about a year ago. So going through, and also to kind of just finding out now that there's the between what was it, Unbreakable, and then Split, and then Glass, like that is basically a superhero trilogy.
Yeah.
So my wife and I watched Unbreakable a few weeks ago. She watched Split, not knowing that it was like the second part of the trilogy, and she just wanted to watch it because she really enjoys James McAvoy as an actor. Who doesn't? He's fantastic. And so I had to find a time to watch it. So I watched that on the flight. When my wife gets back from work travel, we're actually going to watch Glass. So we're going to complete the series. But it got me thinking, Seth, like, this was like I said, I had never seen an M. Night Shyamalan movie. Another movie that I have never seen in my life, and I swear I never will, Titanic.
Really?
James? Yep, have never seen Titanic. And so it's you know, is there a movie or a movie series that is famous that everybody, seemingly everyone has seen, that you have not seen or that you refuse to see? Was curious about this. Am I the only one who hasn't seen some of these huge movies?
I mean, there's several that everyone's like, oh my God. And I'm like, man, whatever. Like the Harry Potters, man, whatever. Okay. Star Trek's, man, whatever. Like they're just, I don't know. I like a lot of movies. I watch a lot of movies, but there's only so much brain space.
Yeah, that is true.
But I do try to like catalog, you know, good movies that even if I might not see them at the time of release, I'm you know, always on the lookout for how I can watch that movie at a later point. Yep. I usually try to go through like the best picture list of every year and try to always watch a good chunk of them, yeah. Which is always get some cool movies that I wasn't, you know, looking for. But yeah, I you know, there's some like the Avatar series, like the James Cameron ones.
Yeah.
Yeah. Never seen any of them.
Wow. Okay.
Then all that's right, like some of the biggest movies in the world. And I'm like, whatever. Blue space people.
Woo. Yeah. I mean, our friends at Grim After Dark, they've had their Christmas holiday special, you know, about those movies for a couple of years running. So
yeah, they have. And I'm like, whatever. Yeah. That's about as much as I know about Avatar. So we didn't talk about this pre-show. Who's doing the industry news?
Well, I think I put some notes in here just because this was like breaking news here. And Avatar, Seth, is about blue space people. And the day that we recorded this, industry magic for everybody out there. There was an update to Warhammer 40K's blue space people, the Tau. So we did get the points update for Tau along with a day one errata to some of the rules or a couple of things in particular here. Seth, did you have a chance to look at these?
Was there anything? I did. I actually have a chance to go through all these today. So So they clarified how Monka works, that it's specifically you always have assault weapons. And then if you're guided, you got lethal. There was an argument before that you couldn't get assault unless you were guided.
Well, yeah, because they were flipped in the original description, and there was some question about that where they technically weren't going to be able to do spotting if they didn't already have assault.
So yeah, there was a whole actually. Yeah, it was weird. So they cleaned that up, which was good. Yep. So this does mean that that everything has the mobility. Not everything is going to have that extra lethality.
And that's for the first three turns of the game that they get that.
Yep. They also, they put out a points update, but they also updated what Forge World models are viable. Oh, yeah. And much like my beloved orcs, a lot of Tau models went away. I think it was the Remora stealth drones, the Barracudas, both the Riptide variants, the Tetras. They all went away.
Yeah.
Which is fine. It's pretty clear between what they did to orcs, which is you only get the Gargantuans we got from Forge World, and Tau, which is you get the Manta, the Taunar, and the Tiger Shark, which is the super heavy flyer. They're very much seeming to cut back on the smaller scale kits and only focus on the large scale kits, which I guess from a from an industry standpoint sort of makes sense to me, because when those kits were originally created, it was easier to make them in resin than it was plastic, but plastic kits have come a long way since then. So now it doesn't make sense to have a Riptide variant that could just be its own plastic kit. What, you know, and maybe those larger kits that are sold in lower numbers, it makes more sense to keep those in resin. So it seems like maybe Forge World and GW as a whole is a little, maybe doing a little refocusing in terms of what the focus of the production is on GW side of things. The points came out. There were a few points changes from the Codex, which were interesting, particularly on some of the new units, like the Sunforge got a little bit of a points change. Mm-hmm. So that was interesting. Krut are a little bit more expensive than people thought. So I've been hearing some of that, but Breachers and Duffelfish are still really cheap. So I think you're gonna see a lot of them. Yeah. So
they're a little bit more expensive than what was originally going to be thought, but they're still cheap enough where they're going to be the backbone for at least what people are thinking are going to be competitive armies for Tau.
I mean, today I saw all types of reactions. I saw people, you know, bemoaning the loss of Tetras and Tau are dead, RIP Tau. And then I have some people in some groups that I'm with that were like, man, my list was already great and it got 125 more points to spend, which makes me sad. No, don't do that. Don't get more points. Although, if I'm going to be honest, Nikki D,
what's that?
I don't mind if there's other boogeymen in the meta right now to keep people away from my damn Meganobs. Let me have my Meganobs. Don't you nerf my Meganobs. Go look at the scary blue fish people. Leave my Meganobs alone.
Seth, I'll tell you in the Legion chat.
Yeah.
Between myself and some of the other guys, especially Sassy Nurgling Steve, we've been talking about is, well, we want to have three Foul Blight Spawn in our Death Guard list just so we can have three units that have fight first, because orcs, we're scared of orcs. That's what we're, which fights first against Tau, that doesn't help us.
Yes,
anyway.
Have your fights first against the Tau. If the Tau, mighty combat prowess.
Yeah, you're exactly right, because if the Tau end up becoming, myself and others, we're teching against the melee orc build, and we're not thinking. So if Tau come out of left field and are shooting all their guns from, you know, 18, 24 inches away, whatever that part is, I don't really have enough that's going to be able to kind of go out and touch them there. So we're definitely going to think, I think, see some meta shifts once these actually hit the streets, and we're going to see some events, which actually for Tau, well, orcs and customers are legal at events now generally, right? And Tau, their codex is going to be updated and comes out this Saturday, May 11th. So it's happening, folks. We're going to see it. It's for real now.
Speaking of Saturdays, why don't we get into the pre-orders?
Yeah.
So this week's pre-orders are Chaos Space Marines. Chaos Space Marines are always exciting. They're a fan favorite. Of course, they're getting a regular codex and a special edition codex, just like the last few books. Special editions do look really great. I was able to get one of the Tau ones, not the Orc ones. Unfortunately, they sold out real quick. I'm a scoot, so I'm not blocking the slide, folks. This is also I think these were previewed at Adepticon, the two new Battle Force boxes, the Veterans of the Long War, which is mostly the more basic infantry type pack with the new Chaos Lord on foot, and the Dread Talons, which was much more assault, like Raptors and Warp Talons, speedy things. And this is your new Chaos Lord and Jump Pack. I know a lot of people that are very excited about these box sets, so these are probably going to sell fast. They're also redoing the Combat Patrol. This now has the new Master Possessions and the Possess units in it, along with Legionnaires and Cultists. We also have the Chaos Cult Firebrand coming out, and the Chaos Space Marines cards and dice coming out this weekend. So all those are going up for pre-order this weekend. Don't forget, if you want to support the show, there's a link below to go to the Frontline Gaming web page, the web cart, and that gives us a little bit of support here on the show. And please get your pre-orders in, because they're going to go fast. This is going to be a popular one. And unfortunately, particularly for those Battle Force boxes, it seems like those generally are going to be in limited stock. So you want to get your pre-orders in.
Yeah, I've heard from some Chaos Space Marine players that this has a good mix of units, some of the new units, and beyond just the characters, where at least from an index standpoint, we're obviously going to see what happens or what's different with the Codex. But from an index standpoint, like if you're starting Chaos Space Marines, that these boxes appear to be a very good value from a dollar standpoint. But also, these are boxes where pretty much everything in these boxes, you're going to use them. Again, based on index, we'll see what happens with Codex.
All right. Well, Nikki D, do you want to take us into the event news?
So event news for FLG. And again, folks, if you missed last week's show, or if you're wondering, you know, why I'm up here instead of back in my production engineering office, Kicker, he talked about it last week. Engineering Bay. Kicker and the family, they are on the move. They are moved out of their house and things are going well, but he has spotty internet, so he'll be back with us in a couple weeks here. But he did make sure to send us some news and updates to cover for FLG items. So first up, Bay Area Open, May 25th and 26th in California. Email codes are people who have registered for events for BAO, you should be getting an email later this week with your access codes for BCP. So make sure that you check that. If you don't see it, be sure to check the player pack, and that'll have the information as well to contact for the judge and to make sure you get a code. So if there's so that you're not trying to figure that out, you know, morning of. But that again should be available. And this episode goes up for release May 9th. So, but you know, by this weekend, May 11th, May 12th, you should be seeing that in your email. Is what we are expecting there. So that is BAO. Next up, Atlantic City Open. New event that is being added, Battletech. That's all for ACO, but you know, more space there at the hotel. Great event. We're just, Seth and I are both going to be there and very excited. Yep. And if you're interested in playing Battletech, we hope to see you at ACO as well. So that is ACO. Next up, Lone Star Open with our Texas Ranger icon. They have added Marvel Crisis Protocol. Seth, I got to say, this is a game that keeps tempting me, especially with all like the Deadpool trailer stuff for that movie coming out later this summer. I keep seeing a lot of Marvel content. MCP, I've heard great things about it as a game. So maybe one day, folks. They've added MCP, and then also the room block is already over. Has already sold over 50% of the room block. It's the fastest that has hit that mark for this event. Yep. This is a newer FLG event, but a growing event. So if you want to get in the room block, definitely recommend checking that out and getting into it sooner rather than later. And then last item that we have, Champions Cup. Seth, we're gonna have a little special thing next week for Champions Cup. The Champions Cup Club Corner. Did I say that right?
Yes. The Champions Cup Club Corner. Yes.
Excellent. Can you explain for the folks? They probably heard it with last week's show, but if not, can you explain for them what that is?
So this is the first year that Frontline Gaming is putting on the Champions Cup. It is a 64 team event, each team being 8 players. That is the largest team event in the world, from my understanding. And so we already have a lot. I think we have all but maybe one ticket sold, or I think that one ticket might already be sold. I don't know. Basically, it's sold out. So we do know who's going to be in attendance. So we're taking that opportunity to highlight the various clubs that are coming through and going to be there supporting this as the first year of this event. So do we know who's next week?
We do. It's a Warhammer. It's a I won't give everything away, but they're a Warhammer.
It might be a legendary.
It might be
co-host.
Yes. Right. Yeah. Exactly. So this will be. I'm excited for this Champions Cup Club Corner interview, and you'll have to stay tuned next week.
It works better when you say Champions Cup Club Corner. You take that pause in between the two.
Champions Cup Club Corner. That is easier. Yeah.
Okay, you take that pause. Champions Cup Club Corner.
All right, there we
go. The C to the power of 4. I don't know how to say that easily.
I don't either. No.
What about some nerd news, Nikki D?
Nerd news. We'll keep this short. So last week I said, hey, we were going to cover Star Wars. May the 4th was this past weekend. I celebrated personally by watching Phantom Menace and then about half of Attack of the Clones before I had to go for brunch, which at brunch I did talk quite a bit about Star Wars with my friend that also loves Star Wars, but there weren't any announcements. Like normally they've got some big announcements, upcoming TV shows or movies, new trailers, not really anything that was there. So in light of that, what I did want to bring up, Seth, you've talked on this show before about Helldivers 2.
Yeah.
Helldivers 2, they got themselves in maybe a bit of hot water, some controversy this past week as it related to how folks play the game or how they're going to have to basically, I'll say it as I understand it. Maybe you can set us straight on this one. But for those accounts on Steam to play the game, it was typically had to be set up, but they were prompting folks or asking folks that they needed to log in for PlayStation Network, which is actually not available in all countries. So if you're in some countries, you couldn't even go in to do it and play the game. Is that basically what happened here? Like this is a game.
Yeah, they were forcing people to regardless of platform, sign in on the PlayStation Network. So there was actually a big pushback from the community, and Sony actually rolled back that requirement. They stepped back from it. So it was kind of funny because someone was pointing out that, you know, this is a game that has to mobilize the community to play on certain portions of the map to achieve community-wide objectives. And unbeknownst to Sony, they gave the community a new objective, which was to slam Sony hard.
Yeah.
And they did.
Yeah. Yeah. It was, as someone who doesn't play the game, but who just follows nerd culture, like this was perhaps one of the biggest backlashes I've seen. But, you know, Sony did make the changes of it. Obviously, one of those other cases of examples where, you know, power for the gamers, the folks that are actually playing the games, enjoying the things, and doing so in a way that we like to. But I think next week or in the upcoming weeks, we'll have some more, hopefully some updated nerd news and other things. But Seth, we'll get into our main topic for this week. And as you and I were game planning for this week's show, we had a couple different thoughts and ideas. We're going to have some shows upcoming, obviously, with some Champions Cup Club Corner. We're going to have a preview and then
a review. Now you got it. You learn to put the pause there, and exactly. it runs smooth.
We're going to have a preview and then a review of Bay Area Open. So this was kind of like, hey, this is one of those open weeks where we got to figure out something, what's going in. And something we've touched on lightly here and there on some of the shows, but where there's been a lot of new information coming out, new Age of Sigmar. So I, of course, have said that I'm going to be jumping into Age of Sigmar. Seth, you're a gamer of multiple of varieties here. So we each kind of took a look. We decided to take a look and to say, hey, well, what information is out there about Age of Sigmar? What's new? What's different? Is this something that might be more appealing for us? But then also for people who have played Age of Sigmar for a long time. So we want to go through for the next 10 minutes or so as our main topic and segment to talk about Age of Sigmar and what we've got covered or what we know so far, which, by the way, GW Open, I think, is coming up in a few weeks, and that's going to be the first chance where they have the full reveal of the game. So, this information at the time of release on Thursday, May 9th, is what we know, what Games Workshop has put out there in their news, in their community articles. But in just a couple of weeks, we should start to have some more solid information, including some, demos from GW themselves to show about the gameplay. But Seth, let's get started. Where do we want to start in this review?
So yeah, you kind of put a lot of stuff in there in our notes, kind of behind the scenes here. I think, to me, I'm trying to equate everything from AOS to 40K and make sense of it. I like how you start off with the battle pack, the styles of play. So we basically have three styles of play. Spearhead is basically the AOS style of combat patrol size games. Mm-hmm. So those are those kind of complete boxes, the Vanguard boxes or the Spearhead boxes that provide you a complete force to play a small scale game. So it's an easy entry point. They also have a narrative style campaign system that's called Path to Glory. Mm-hmm. And then they have their match play, which is competitive. And then they have a season rule specific for each season of play, which is updated routinely. This kind of starts off with, I don't know, is it a book? Is it kind of like Ninth Edition Arcs of Omen, or is
that,
it
that part I'm not sure on myself either, Seth, how it's going to be done, but they've said that these are going to be updated. I don't know if it's just with each general's handbook, how that goes, where their general's handbook is essentially our updates in 40K,
our uniform field manuals.
That part I'm not sure exactly how frequently, maybe it's, I think it's once a year has been their general part of it. Mm-hmm. But Age of Sigmar has a lot more, maybe, I don't know, thematic elements where these updates. And so for this first season, it's going to be this bodyguard type of ability where it generally pushes players to play their armies, their factions in a certain way. So with this honor guard, essentially a unit gets this additional keyword, gets this extra effect where they can reduce the number of incoming attacks from, if they're within a range of their general being able to do things. So, generally, what is that going to make players to do conceptually? Like, you're going to want to have big beefy or big melee units around your general. You're going to want to again, you're being incentivized to play in that method, that fashion.
Do we want to get into the army construction, because that seems is like the part that when I was trying to play third edition AOS that my brain couldn't wrap itself around. So reading this was interesting. So it's built in a regiment style, and when you play a game, you can have between 1 and 5 regiments in your army. Each regiment has to have a character,
but only one,
and only one character. So
it's
that
like Highlander,
you're going to be maxed at like 5 characters in your army, and each regiment can have up to 3 other units or 4 if that regiment has your general in it. But those units that go in that regiment are specific units that are linked to that hero. So it's interesting because it's sort of like having, and this is taking a step back a few editions for
I see where 40K. You're going.
It's having like 5 mini force org charts that you can take, which I think is really cool. And so then there's also the battle formations, which sort of function like sub factions. Then you can add auxiliary units, but that's going to decrease the amount of command points you have. So I think that's really interesting. And jumping forward, it'll be interesting to see how that is applied to the armies going forward. Like you're into Skaven.
Yep.
So I can imagine that, like, you know, there's a bunch of different sub factions of Skaven, you know, so there, what is it? The, oh, there's the poison dudes. What are they called? Pestilence.
Pestilence. Yeah. So like, so, I
expect- so there may be like a pestilence character that then you can have certain pestilence units.
Yep.
And so you're like, man, I really want these poison, globe wind bombardier dudes, but I got to take this character to get them.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So. I expect that between the regiments and the sub factions, I think it really puts it everything to like having the characters that are going to have their, the support units where there's synergies that are created to it. So
yeah,
it's less of like a Mod Podge, you know, a potpourri of units just kind of put together. But generally, if you've got a character, they're going to be supporting specific units there. You know, we'll see about the sub factions, how those are going to be playing into it as well. And how that goes into the design standpoint. But, you know, that's how the kind of how the parts work here. Seth, let's talk about scoring, though,
and how that's going to work. This is very interesting
to me. So scoring the way that the game is set, and it's a 5-battle-round game, so mm-hmm. just like 40K is now, 5 battle rounds, there are different missions, and we'll get more information about those, but primary scoring, which is going to be holding objectives, just like 40K, that there, it's different scoring for different missions, but regardless of what it is, the max you can score in a turn is 6 for primary. All right. Secondary, different ways that you can pick the secondaries, we'll touch on that in a little bit, but those max at 4, so the max per turn, so yep. 6 primary, 4 secondary per turn, so total 10
per turn. Yeah,
most, so the max score you're going to be able to get there based on the information we have so far is max of 50 points per game. Nice round even number, just much like what we have for 40K, but that's a full 100 right now. One of the things that comes to this, however, and it's perhaps the most revered, most infamous, most hated, despised, most intriguing to Age of Sigmar players, it's the double turn mechanic, right? And this plays into the scoring, Seth. So it's a sort of item where if you win the priority roll and then you choose to go first and thus give yourself a double turn, what that's going to do is you can do that, but if you do that, you forego picking a secondary for that turn. So, you know, you do get to, hey, you get the benefit of that double turn, but you're giving up 4 points, and 4 points out of 50 that's there,
that's a big chunk.
From a score, that's a big chunk of it. So it's an item where, you know, if you do what you want to and taking that double turn, that really can help catapult you into really taking the lead and controlling the game. But if you whiff on that part of it, you know, at that point, then your opponent is in the driver's seat. They can score their thing. And hey, maybe then they are able to get a double turn and really come back at you. So it does add that little bit of extra.
Always been like the most like polarizing thing about AOS is the
by far
turn. Yeah, and I like this change because it is like, in talking to some folks that play it pretty regularly right now, they're like, yeah, there's no, if you get the chance for a double turn right now, there is no downside to it. You just take it.
Yep.
You just take your double turn. There's very, very few scenarios where you would not. This is significant enough that if you're like, man, we're in a close game, I can't not give up 4 points to get this better board position or kill some units.
Yep.
And so it at least adds a choice dynamic there. And with the scale being like, you know, 50 points is the max you can score for, is a pretty big deal.
It is.
So yeah, I enjoy this change because AS, it's still random, but it is no longer like I randomly got lucky and took the obvious choice and did 2 turns in a row. It is now like, ooh, if I do 2 turns in a row, I mean, to flip it around, you on average can score about 10 points in secondaries in 40K out of 100-point game. So that's close to the same amount of points. You know, if that would be like just one turn being like, I'm playing tactical and I just choose to draw no cards this turn and score nothing, that would be a big tempo hit in a lot of games.
So, and speaking of the secondaries or the battle tactics as it goes, one of the things that we know about the battle tactics is that, oh, I hit the button, wrong button there. Which one? All right. We'll go back to that here for a second. But with the battle tactics, one of the things that we know is that they're going to be, there are 6 universal battle tactics that you can choose from. And that's one of the things is you choose each round, which one that you are selecting. There's 6 universal. And then depending on what grand faction you are, so order, chaos, destruction, or death, there's 2 that are specific to that grand faction. So,
and, you know, these be repeated or
no, when you select a battle tactic, that's a good question. When you select a battle tactic, you cannot then, you know, select it again. For that part of it. So there's an aspect of that, as I said in the article, where, hey, you know, this is something where, hey, maybe you think you can score it, you know, turn 2, or like, hey, maybe there's a battle tactic where, you know, you can score it turn 2, but there's a good chance you can score it later in the game. So do you use it and burn it now, or do you, you know, try something else, which that may more align with controlling mid board or an objective?
So,
so there's, that, there is a tactical. Yeah,
I'm liking this because, so one of the things that happens in 40K that very good players do, and I'm struggling to do. So you and I are playing a game. We're both playing tactical. There's 16 objectives in the deck. You draw two per turn. So that's like, you're going to go through, if you recycle, like, you know, you'll get at most 11 of those. And so as we get towards the end of the game, you know, good players are like, all right, I'm top of turn. I scored my primary. Does he have overwhelming force left in his deck? If so, I'm going to walk off the objectives. Yeah. And it can be a little, it's a little bit more complicated, a little harder to follow when there's 16 possibilities and then trying to remember what's left versus there's at most six universal, two faction specific. There's five rounds. So as we get down to the bottom of the game, it's going to be easier for me to figure out, what are you trying to do, Nikki D? What can I do to try to prevent that? So I do like that it's a little bit limited number there.
Yeah. So Seth, I want to keep in us or taking a look here at the time as it goes. We'll kind of go through the last items that we know. And again, these are some of the more intricate elements of the game that we'll touch on before we wrap up the main segment. But endless spells. Endless spells or endless prayers, because some of the armies like Khorne, or
they don't spell, they don't pray. Spells.
Right. So now everything is rolled up or called into manifestations, and they're now also interactive throughout the course of the game. So manifestations, and whether it's the endless spells now, the manifestations, or whether it is the spell lords at Wizards or the prayer lords that they're, you choose those when you are forming your army, when you're creating your army, creating your roster. So you have those set. The manifestations are rolled up into universal manifestation lores that typically have three or four that you're going to be able to choose from and cast. And then, of course, each faction is going to have their own manifestations. The other thing about these manifestations, we're going to think about them kind of like they're almost like they almost like become terrain pieces, more or less.
Yeah.
They have their own data sheets, which are going to have their own movement value. Sometimes they'll be static, but own movement, if applicable, they're going to have a save value. They're going to have health, which is their number of wounds. Some of these are even going to have melee and ranged attacks as part of what they're doing in the game. Because obviously, like, there's a manifestation where it's a bunch of flying swords. That's, what else would that be but melee attacks, right? So these are going to be things
where it could be ranged attacks. A sword could fly out.
Oh, that could. Throwing star or something like that, too. Yeah. So, you know, this is going to mean that it's not just, you're not just relying on unbinding an endless spell or an endless prayer.
Yeah, you can just punch it to death.
Or punch these.
I'm going to punch the flying swords to death. I'll be back.
Bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see how that one plays out. So yeah, that's how that part's going to go. The sorcery and prayers, we talked about having that as the lore. Prayers to me is going to be a really interesting mechanic, because every time a priest has to do a prayer, they kind of do a chant, and you can accumulate these points that go to it. And then based on how you're doing that, the chanting roll. Seth, when we did a Codex Cliff Notes a couple weeks ago, you brought up the concept from Magic the Gathering of a kicker condition.
Yeah.
Not our host, not related to our host.
Different kicker condition.
Different kicker condition. But essentially, it's if something happens, you know, you're playing a card in Magic, you get that. But if you pay more or do something else with the kicker, it basically elevates the casting of that spell. Same thing here, where if you have a certain number of chanting points or enough on a chanting roll, that can get you a bonus to that prayer going off. So it's a sort of thing where, like, early in the game or later in the game, do you just want the chant to go off, or do you want to build it up to get a greater effect later in the game? So that part of the dynamic, it's a bit of a gamble, but I like that. That's going to be something there. We're playing a dice game. Let's have some elements to it. Final item set that I'll kind of cover, combat phase. This was something where it was announced pretty early in the process that the combat phase, there wasn't going to be any more range on the weapons. So some weapons in Age of Sigmar had a 1-inch range or 2-inch range. So like how they were piled. Yeah. Or 3-inch. Now everybody just has that three inch range. The way that this is going to be taken into effect, though, is that different weapons or different, you know, melee weapon profiles are going to have different abilities. So for example, they showed this off in the Warhammer community article. Vindicators have this anti charge ability, meaning that if a unit charges them, the Vindicators get an additional AP or initial rend or additional AP on their attacks. So it's a unit where they don't have range, but they're a unit that is very good at going to be sitting on objective, and if you want to come and fight them, they're going to punch you back and it's going to hurt pretty good. So you know that part of it, it's not just that, it's not that, hey, range goes away, all nuance to combat goes away, abilities are baked into melee prep profiles or data sheets where they're still going to have some of their unique character and unique flavor. So that part of it is kind of unique or interesting to me, because you can definitely see how unit of Vindicators, which are supposed to be kind of bodyguards, you know, have them stay somewhere, resist a charge, and then, really form that anvil so you can have your hammer units come in and control the board from there. So, Seth, overall, you know, Age of Sigmar, new Age of Sigmar, thoughts? What are you hearing? What are you hearing from the community about what we've seen and heard?
I'm hearing a lot of people that are interested. I know a lot of guys that play this kind of as their secondary game. You know, they like to just relax and have a good time with it. And it certainly is keeping that vibe. It's not overly complex. It's not, you know, becoming something that the community doesn't vibe with anymore.
Yeah.
I know a lot of actually AOS players that were pretty adamant about they wanted to keep the double turn. They felt that was kind of like a core identity of the game. And so they've kept it, but they've kind of done it in a way that I at least now understand it and find it interesting. So I think that's cool, because that could bring in some other new players. So overall, yeah, I think things are going in the right direction. I'm kind of excited to see how the game shapes out when we get to see kind of some live games. And who knows, maybe I will collect some more orc variants out there.
They do have orcs in the game, Seth. Yeah, Oryx, of the destruction faction. I'll note at this point, and Seth, you've called out this podcast numerous times. They're FLG affiliates and network partners, and also quite famous at FLG events like LVO. But the I've started listening to the Party at the All Points podcast. Yep. Very enjoyable. I've also been enjoying that. I think it's Dayton. Who, as a Canadian, has just recently started watching the show Letterkenny and realizing that some of the jokes or references that the other hosts use are actually from the show Letterkenny, which to me, it was just funny. I've really been enjoying that. And they've done some deeper dives on these updates and about kind of, hey, what does this mean? How could this, obviously there's still a lot of things that are not yet known, but already trying to kind of put two and two together to give people who are routine Age of Sigmar players a little bit of better idea on, hey, this is how the game's going to change. These are the things that you should consider. So if you don't already listen to Party at the All Points, join the train with me and listen into those folks. Great, great fun folks. And they're quite funny at times as well. But one of those shows where you probably wouldn't want to be listening to on an airplane without headphones on, I would say that, which you shouldn't be doing.
I mean, if you listen to any podcast on an airplane without headphones on, I have questions for you to begin with.
But it's a bad move anyways.
I get what you're saying. Don't listen to it in front of the kids.
Yeah.
All right. Well, let's get into some community questions. Of course, if you want to ask us a question, head on over to our Discord, hop in. Every week we set up a thread in the show questions thread for you to pop your questions in there. Up first. And unfortunately, I don't think this is the best week to ask this question. Hawks is for Life asks, as a new parent, how do you deal with the inconsistent opportunities to paint and hobby? This would have been a great question for Kicker. So we may circle back around when Kicker's back on for this one.
I'll just say, Seth, as it relates to this, I mean, we chatted a little bit because there were some questions about how to do hobby well with just limited time. And there was some discussion in our Discord about it over the last week. And one of the things that was brought up was, you know, have yourself like a mobile painting station, like just get yourself a little tray where you can have some things set where you can bring it around with you at different points in time. I know for myself and even just actually, you know, a good friend of mine, Jeremy, who I think you may have met at Cherokee a couple of years ago. You know, he was someone who had a couple of, you know, kids. Yes. Yep.
And yeah, I think I played him at Mayhem.
Yes. Okay. Yep. So yes, that's right. Are you guys played on stream? I think. So anyways, like I had talked to Jeremy where, you know, he's got a couple of kids now and you know, when does he, and it's very much a, hey, have your setup so that when you have the time, you can jump right into it and get to work. Yeah, you don't want to be able to have, because anytime you have to kind of go and set up and tear down everything.
You don't want a bunch of prep and exactly clean up that has to be done every time.
Yep.
So simplify your setup. I think that's a good idea. So all right, but we'll bug Kicker with more about that one next week, Hawks. up next, we actually had it was interesting. Percy in the group posted up a Lego police themed Votan army. Which it looks like he basically kind of like photoshopped the base Votan army to the colors that he wanted to kind of get an idea, which some people thought were really cool. I actually think the color scheme, it looks really cool because it's mostly black with like blue and red accents. But his question was, how do you handle not loving a paint scheme? I understand what you're saying, man, because honestly, in terms of the things I've painted, I've improved my ability over the years as a painter. I don't like my Tau paint scheme anymore.
I think we've all been in that situation.
I'm pretty far committed to that army. So at the end of the day, you know, it comes down to how far are you into it? Like, if sake of argument, I have painted a Tyranid Gaunt, singular. I can definitely change. You know, if it's like, sake of argument, my Votann, I have a lot of Votann painted, but if I wanted to, I'm not too deep into that army. I could probably strip models, and there's a number of different products out there to do it. But at the end of the day, it just kind of comes down to like how far you are into that project, how committed are you, and what do you want to get out of that project? Like my Tau, I don't love them, but they still look good. I still can take them to events. If I decided, you know, I wanted to play Tau in an upcoming event and I needed to paint a few more models to make it work, I'll paint a few more models and make it work. And I'm not trying to win best painted with that army. If you are really trying to go for like a best painted, I think then it matters more about loving the paint scheme. And then maybe then you look at the effort of either, you know, rebuying models and redoing from scratch or stripping models, whatever you want. But it's kind of how far are you into the project and what do you want to get out of it? That's kind of my decision making of what I do when I don't love a paint scheme anymore. What about you? Have you ever painted something you don't love anymore, Nikki D?
I mean, I'm in the process of stripping some Death Guard models currently, Seth, because, you know, when they started as a faction or having their own line of models in 8th edition, I went a traditional painting route with the Death Guard, and I still like that scheme, but at that point I was really just getting into 40K or getting into Warhammer again. And I didn't really know about thinning my paints properly or edge highlighting well and doing some of those things. So I like the scheme, but the models were just very poorly done. So that's the part where for me, you know, I'm still keeping with that scheme, but I'm going about it in a slap chop method.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And for me, slap chop is something where, you know, I'm not going to win best painted, but my army is in the slap chop is if you're not familiar with it, you can check out The Honest War Gamer has a video about it. You're basically dry brushing, you're priming a model black, dry brushing it up with some lighter colors, some gray and then white, and then you're using contrast paints or something like that to fill it in. It's a really nice, easy, simple way, but actually adds a lot of great detail. And it's a part there where I've gotten great comments about my army. It's very simple and easy to do. I'm never going to win a painting award for it, but it looks good. And, you know, for me, and it's efficient. Yeah, you're able to batch paint things a lot easier, which also can be a struggle for me. But so the thing for me, if there's a paint scheme that I don't love or it's a paint technique that I don't love, that's ultimately do I want to paint this a different way? Or do I want to keep that color, but just have a more efficient or more fun way to do it? I think that's kind of which route you need to decide. Mm-hmm. The other thing I would say here generally is like, find someone in your community that is a proficient painter, either that knows color theory well, and ask them like, hey, I want to paint my Votann bluish red. You know, if Percy wants to stick with that color scheme, you know, if you want to stick with that color scheme, maybe talk with some folks about how to hit those colors and those accents so they stand out more to get what you're going for, or if it's something where you want to change it all together. But, you know, generally I would say your hobby time is your hobby time. If you don't like it anymore, don't stick with it. I think that's the most important advice that I can give here. Don't stick don't stick with a hobby scheme if you don't like it anymore.
Yep. Figure out fair something enough. New. We got one more question that got posted up that I think is an interesting one, because I think you and I may go about it in different ways.
Oh, okay.
So Kelsey posted up and asked, what do you guys, when looking to make a new army, how do you go about it? Like, how do you go about collecting the models? What's your plan for it? So for me, when I go to start a new army, it's almost always starts with like, I'm going to write a list and I'm going to buy, build and paint to the list. Mm-hmm. And then after I get to that point, I'm adding, I'm changing, I'm evolving the army. But that tends to be me. I start with a 2000 point list. That's my goal. I'm going to get there and then I'll pivot as I need to from that point. What about you, Nikki D?
Yeah, Seth, good call out here because we are taking very different approaches to this answer. So kudos and thanks to Kelsey. We're going to mention Kelsey in just a moment here as well. But my approach, I mentioned last week how I've been hoarding Skaven in anticipation. And that's basically my approach is I'm going to go to the, you know, frontline secondhand shop. I'm going to be going and looking and trying to find, hey, what are some models and especially newer kits, right? We've talked about this with some of the Forge World where, hey, those are being removed. And even just some older kits. Like, so for me right now, I'm starting a new army with Skaven. I am basically only buying Skaven models that have been updated since they switched over to Age of Sigmar. You know, with the exception being the Vermin Lords. But basically for me, it's like, hey, I want to be able, these are units that I know I can start to work and I can start to hobby on them. Are they going to be the best thing as I start a new army? And obviously right now with Age of Sigmar going through edition change, no one knows. So yeah. Who knows? The stuff that I'm buying right now could all be terrible, but it's that sort of thing where it is a cyclic game. You know, many units that are not good at one point, they'll come back around at another point and we'll see. But for me, especially if it's an army where I know I'm going to be committed to it, I may as well just start collecting. I may as well just start getting experience with it, start to work out the hobby progress that's there. And because to me, I look at it, and Seth, you know, your approach, that 2,000-point list, you know, if we get a MFM or if we get a points update or an errata, like that 2,000-point list could be neutered real fast. And that's the part there where I don't have a very quick hobby progress. So for me, it's like, I just want to make sure I've got stuff that I can use.
Yeah. And that's why I asked the question, man. Yeah. I knew we'd have different answers. All right, let's get into some community hobby progress. First up, Kelsey, same man, same myth, yeah, same legend, posted up this changeling. This is actually a creature caster model. It looks really good. He's also starting a demon army. I'm disappointed in you, Kelsey, because you were starting an orc army. How many armies are you starting at the same time? Why are you cheating on your beloved orcs? I expect more from you. Up next, Aaron. Posted up his custom Lulleth Hesperax. Very, very dynamic model, kind of diving off that so tactical rock with them lovely blades. I don't know if she's good in Drakari, but she does certainly look good there. So great job, Aaron. And then finally, JC from our brothers over at the Legion of Extraordinary Gentlemen posted up his Gladiator Reapers painted in his lovely Salamander paint scheme. I can't imagine painting that many flames, but great job, JC. They look great.
Yeah, I would say JC also noted with these that he loves the gladiators and love what they do on the table, love how they look. But this is one of his least favorite models to build.
I have heard that from a few people now.
Yeah. Seth, is there a model or a unit where like you love it, but just you don't want to have to build it ever again in your life because it's just not the greatest to build, or it's just it's a lot of pieces or anything in between?
That would be the Orc Truck. It is a very finicky kit. It is very old. The contact points between the various parts are very small and tend not to glue very well. Fortunately, I have a bunch of them already built and painted. I don't particularly go convert. If you want some trucks, go convert people.
Which, I mean, that would be the orky way to do it anyways. For me, it's got to be, and fortunately, he's an epic hero, so I don't have to build and paint him again. Illuminar's Desaris. Legs and his backpack thing and everything like that. That was one of the most difficult models. I remember building him while watching it would have been, I think, 2021 LV Nopen or whatever it was. It was when LVO
the couldn't LV nope.
happen. Yeah, yeah, when it couldn't happen. So it was just a lot of the streaming, groups had some games. I remember trying, and it took me basically 6 hours to build Cesaris, where like that model was just so looks great. And he's one of my favorite models in my collection, but I am very glad I don't have to build him ever again. Appreciate the hobby progress there, folks.
Yep. And again, hop into our Discord, share your hobby progress. We're always in there posting. Final thoughts for the night, Nikki D?
All right, we're going to see what hobby progress I can get done, Seth. But I'm going to not one, but two concerts this upcoming weekend. So that's
obviously
going
to, you know, why wouldn't progress, you?
Including one of them on my actual birthday. So I'm very excited for that, which will be fun. And then what else? I will be figuring out, because I have to submit my list this weekend for Maryland Open. So I will be figuring out. I will have some hobby progress in at least that regard as we go forward. But I think that's going to be kind of it for me. Although I would say also stay tuned to this channel, because we should also have some updates for Saturday. So some exciting stuff that we'll have
keep
coming
your
there.
Eyes peeled.
Yes. Seth, how about for you?
For me, I got to finalize that list because I list locked this weekend. Yep. This is my last weekend at home for the month. Okay. After this, every weekend's away at events. So there's some like optional hobby progress I could do. I don't know if I'll get to it or not. Basically I need 20 boys for one of the lists. I have plenty of painted boys, but do I want to paint 20 of the new orc boys or just use my old orc boys? So we'll see how motivated I am, see how much practicing I need to get in. So we may get some orc boys then. We may not. We'll find out. But we thank you so much for joining us for this episode of Signals from the Frontline. Have a great week, and we will see you on the front line.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.